At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Scoop on Monday, September 15th. And I want to welcome everyone from all over the country and all over the world, as is our reach on Smarter News. I heard a very interesting commentary that I wanted to share with you off the top that I think will resonate with so many of you. And it's also a way to congratulate you on what you're building here at Smarter News. So it was a very smart conversation. It was over on the Free Press, which is an independent news outlet that's surfaced in recent years. And it was a podcast that was taped in the following hours and days after the murder of Charlie Kirk. And we're going to spend the bulk of our time today talking about that news story, while also sprinkling in a little bit more. But I believe this is where many of you are interested in today. And so unlike our typical scoops, where we really try to make sure that we cast a really wide net, we're going to cast a wide net, but we're going to quickly turn to Charlie Kirk. One of the things that was said in this podcast is, as there were those that were reflecting on what does this moment mean for America, one of the writers and contributors that was on the podcast said in conversation, and that's why I want to credit the broadcast for it, that this was a moment for those in the center to speak up, to make sure that they're of a greater posture. That oftentimes when someone doesn't have strong political ideation, when they're not right or left, they're center, they're thought of as not really having an opinion. You know, you're so neutral, there's no opinion. But really, that needs to be channeled into the center becoming chic and more cool and more outspoken for love of country and for information and curiosity, that we need to make the center the cool kids. And as I'm listening to this conversation, I was like, I think we've already done that over at Smarter News. I'd like to raise my hand. I know a lot of cool people over there that are doing really interesting things, that are taking a stand by making sure that they're attached to and supporting a nonpartisan news source. And so I'm here to congratulate you on being trendsetters, because that's exactly what you are. And at this moment, I appreciated that insight, which I believe is true, that if you don't have a strong political voice, if you're open to hearing a lot of sides and you're thought of as maybe being timid, of not jumping into the arena. And that's not how I view you at all. I don't view you as timid. I view you as courageous and constantly exercising your liberty with asking questions. And that's what we're about here at Smarter News, curiosity over commentary, and making sure to lean into that. And so this is a place, and during this broadcast, that we're going to try to answer some of your key questions from over the last week. There's been a lot of unexpected news over the last week, and that's an understatement. And you have a lot of folks telling you that there's a watershed moment here in America. The thing about watershed moments or tipping points is oftentimes we don't get to call them right away. Sometimes we do, but sometimes it's difficult to know. Is that the way history will judge this moment? But you're hearing that a lot. And so I want to lean into that a little bit. Two big questions have come from you on social media and through our insiders as well. Thank you to our insiders for contributing to Smarter News. And those two big questions include, why is the death of Charlie Kirk so significant? Why is it something that people are calling a watershed moment? And some of you are coming at that very innocently and feel a little bit judged by asking that question. because some of you are not as familiar with his work, which totally fine. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. Some of you are very familiar with his work and understand why this is a significant story, but you also have questions about what you're considering is disproportionate media coverage. And I can offer a little insight on that just because I've seen behind the scenes the way that the media works at a larger scale, and also understand this story a little bit from a different perspective as a journalist, at least as someone that believes in free speech, free expression, and a free press. There's also another question that keeps coming up about the repercussions in the aftermath of this murder, about why people are being fired and where is the line drawn? When we talk about cancel culture and we talk about free speech, like how are we organizing these things in our head? And why are we seeing certain folks terminated in the aftermath of this because of comments that they made online? How is that happening here, but it doesn't happen in other news stories? So these are a couple of things that we're going to be tackling. Before I get to that, I just want a moment of levity because I showed some of you this on Instagram this weekend, because I feel like one of the other big requests we've gotten is, where's the good news? You're like, can you compile some good news for us, Jenna? And I have some good news, and it was hard to compile, but we're going to start with that. I also just want to give a little bit of a warning that some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about today is a little bit graphic in nature, and I always like to have a news broadcast that doesn't catch you off guard if you're listening with your family of different ages. This might be one where we're going to get into some tough stuff. I defer to you about mixed audiences, but I just want to mention that because I'm actually showing you a picture of my six-year-old, and more so I'm showing you this picture because of what I'm wearing, which happen to be these eye patches that you're supposed to put on to get rid of puffy eyes. And when you wake up and you look like you haven't slept, which is exactly how I looked on Saturday. And because many of you probably relate to this, I thought this would be a good place to start just to make you laugh, because I just grabbed these things. Turns out I probably have them put on backwards I was wondering why they didn't work. They probably didn't put them on correctly, but I wanted to share with you the reaction from my six-year-old, because no matter what's happening in the world, children have a way of just cutting through the clutter. So here is my six-year-old True on Saturday morning around 7:15. True, yeah, you want to touch him? What did you ask me about these? What did you ask?
What are they?
Well, because I have puffy eyes when I wake up sometimes, and I'm trying to see if these work. I don't know. I just bought them at Walgreens. But you were concerned. What did you ask me? You asked me. What did you ask me?
Oh, what are they for?
No, and then you asked me, are you going to wear them to my football game? Were you worried about that?
Yeah, because I worry people are going to make fun of me.
You're going to worry about people. People would make fun of me, but they probably would understand. So that's my, I think these were very valid questions. He's like, Mom, are you wearing those to my football game? Because they got to take them off. Those are not good. Anyhow, that's it. That's what the six-year-old's like. Also, I don't want people making fun of you, so I appreciate that. All right, three quick stories real fast that are good news stories that I'd like to share with you. So we'll go through these rapid fire questions and rapid fire stories, if you will. First of all, it's about 100 or 101 days to Christmas. It depends on how you're counting. And at this moment, the United States Postal Service is announcing that you're going to be able to start answering letters for those that are submitting letters to Santa. So this happens every year. They announce a date, just happens to be today, that they're going to start accepting letters to Santa. And then later on, you're going to have an opportunity to go on their website and maybe answer one of those letters if a child wants a gift. So we have a few examples of this. This is a Dear Santa letter. This hit close to home. I'm just going to read this to you. Dear Santa, there's one thing I want for Christmas. I want a fish. And if you can't get a fish, can you use your magic to clean my room? Signed, Madison. I thought that was a good one. Also, I think my son might have written that too, because he wants a pet bass, which he's not getting for Christmas. It's September, but he's not going to get that. But this is always a great exercise. Goes back about 100 years for the U.S. Postal Service that people write into Santa. And yes, the Postal Service does take those letters and you can answer those letters. So just want to make sure that you know that. Also, happy shopping. I mean, it's never too early, right? We can start saying Merry Christmas. That can change the tone a little bit. Here's another video. This is separate I just want to show you this. These are cubs. What you're seeing here are, I didn't have puppies. I didn't have kittens, but I did have cubs. And these are from the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, I believe. Let me just double check that. Brookfield Zoo. And this is in Illinois. So these are Amur, if I'm saying that correctly, Amur leopards. If you are an Amur leopard fan or expert, I apologize for my enunciation. But apparently, there's only about 100 of these leopards left in the wild. So this birth is considered, I'm quoting here, a significant milestone in global conservation efforts. And these cubs. It's a Monday, guys. These cubs are now old enough that they've gone through like a wellness check and they're starting to try to learn how to pounce like their mother. So surely keeping her up in the middle of the night, but they sure are cute. So we decided to show those to you because, again, good news. And now finally here, I just have one other good news story. If you like flowers, this is a really good one to share with you, especially if you like sunflowers. So let me go ahead and pull this up. This is from the Associated Press. And what this is a Guinness World Record sunflower. So the world's tallest sunflower blooms in an Indiana backyard as a tribute to Ukraine. Let me read this for you. When Ukrainian immigrant Alex Babich stands in his Indiana backyard, craning his neck to look 35 feet up into the sky, he isn't just staring at a sunflower. He is looking at his roots and his future legacy. The flower, nicknamed Clover and confirmed Wednesday by Guinness World Records as the tallest sunflower ever measured, stretches as high as a telephone pole. Achieving the feat holds special significance for the 47-year-old since sunflowers are the national flower of Ukraine. So he says it's kind of like having a kid. You got to go and check on it all the time. But just sort of this moment of accomplishment for him. And also because we're going to be talking a little bit about Ukraine, and obviously Ukraine has been in the news as of late, thought you would enjoy that story as well. So congratulations to Alex out in Indiana, Guinness World Records. So congratulations, Alex. All right, let's go to a little bit of a few harder news stories I just want to put on your radar today. We got Congress back in session, so we're going to have a lot of hearings this week. There's going to be a lot of activity on Capitol Hill, separate from what we're already kind of hearing about murmurs of potentially different legislations or meetings in the wake of the murder of Charlie Kirk. One of the things you have to keep an eye on this week is just any conversations we see regarding a government shutdown, because we do know that is on the horizon potentially at the end of September if there's not a funding bill that is agreed on by both sides. You have some advocating a short-term spending bill. Again, that would be a patch, like a Band-Aid over this that would get us several weeks out, maybe until the new year. You have others that don't like that idea, and you see both sides jostling for positions. On September 15th, we're about 15 days away from that deadline, so it's a little difficult to commit to any particular thinking right now to really dive deep for any of them to say, here's one side, here's the other side. This probably will coalesce over the next week, and as we go into the following week, we're going to have more serious details to probably root through and see which is some of the holdups and what should we actually dedicate some time to. But as of now, that is sitting in front of Congress right now. Second thing I want you aware of is that it looks like there's some sort of potential deal that has been in concept pulled together regarding TikTok and TikTok operating in the United States. But really, the story is not about TikTok. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, said that on Friday, we should have some sort of conversation between President Trump and the leader of China. And this would be in related to TikTok. But really, what we're watching for here is anything larger regarding trade. So is the TikTok agreement actually going to happen? And is that going to be part of a broader trade agreement? That would be huge news if it is, because of the obvious connection between our two economies. And so that's what we're really watching for. So yes, you're going to see headlines about TikTok. But when you see headlines about TikTok, ask yourself, am I seeing anything more on trade? So just a heads up on that. The other thing I just want to mention to you here, and I'm going to pull up a quick map, is what's going on in Ukraine, but not really Ukraine, the surrounding countries. So as you know, Russia invaded Ukraine. The attacks on Ukraine continue. We're seeing a higher tempo of those. But now we're seeing Russia and Russian drones fly into other countries like Poland and like Romania, which share a border with Ukraine. This is not necessarily new. This isn't the first time that this has happened. This has happened periodically over the last several years of war. The difference here is the pacing and the amount that we're seeing and the fact that this is happening in sequentially. So it was Poland last week, and now it's Romania, and both of these are NATO countries. And remember, we're a member of NATO, which is the largest military alliance in the world, which means that we have a promise of collective defense. If Romania or Poland are attacked by Russia in any way, it would be part of NATO's obligation to defend these two countries. This is why this conversation about Ukraine being a member of NATO has been such a hot topic, because if Ukraine was a member of NATO and this was happening with Russia, then basically all of Europe would have to come to Ukraine's defense, and then you have a much wider conflict. So we're watching Poland and Romania very carefully, because if this continues by Russia, then you could see more action from NATO, which then could signal a broader conflict, which has always been the concern about this happening in this part of the world. So yes, we have very big domestic stories that we're watching. This story has the potential to be extremely significant, and I don't want to lose sight of it because of the implications. This is important. President Trump talked about potentially more sanctions on Russia, but he also put some responsibility on other NATO nations, saying, hey, the United States is not going to do this by ourselves. We need all of NATO to be united about sanctions on Russia. But you also know that some of these NATO countries in Europe have very specific economic ties to Russia. And although some of those have been unwound in recent years, not all of them have been. And there's a fear, there's quite frankly a fear of further sanctions on Russia and what that can mean for the economy overall. So this is definitely a story we have to keep an eye on. I don't want to lose track of it. I think looking at a map is really important, because we can see, wait, these are pretty big countries. Poland and Romania are significant countries. We have a whole bunch of NATO countries that are within a striking distance of drones that are in Ukraine that could drift over to these other countries. So keep an eye on this. It's something we don't want to lose track of. And finally, just one quick thing, because we have the Secretary of State traveling in Israel. Last week, we had something unexpected take place with Israel attacking Hamas or targeting Hamas in Qatar. Qatar is a country that is considered an ally of the United States, but sometimes we have questions about true motivations. And I say we, I'm speaking generally when you look at foreign policy of the United States. We have a connection to Qatar. We have an alliance with Qatar. But we also know that Qatar, at times there's been questions raised about money funding terrorist operations. We also know that Qatar has provided a safe place for Hamas leadership to come for negotiations. They were also a place where the Taliban came. So Qatar has both the opportunity and a way of speaking to multiple sides. But sometimes when they speak to multiple sides, there's a question about where their loyalties lie. That said, we've never seen an attack like the one that Israel had on Hamas operatives inside Qatar, which is a sovereign nation. Similar to what we're watching for in Europe, when we see that happen, we ask that question of, wait a minute, if Israel's going to strike in Qatar, if Qatar wanted to retaliate, wait a minute, what does that do to the Middle East? And what does that start looking at it like as a broader conflict? That's why that move by Israel really mattered. It was a bold move, and not a country that was necessarily adversarial to Israel, much different than, for example, targeting Hamas operatives inside Iran or Hezbollah operatives inside Iran, which is an adversary of Israel very clearly. So there was questions about what does this mean for U.S.-Israeli relations, because Israel did something that was pretty bold that maybe the United States did or did not agree with. There's all sorts of conversations about that. The real question here is, what's the way forward between Israel and Hamas and the war that's taking place in Gaza? Here's what Secretary of State Rubio had to say today. Just want to, again, put this on your radar.
If you still think that the military dismantlement of Hamas is possible.
Well, Hamas can surrender tonight if they want, lay down their weapons. The problem is they're a terrorist group, a barbaric group, whose stated mission is the destruction of the Jewish state. So we're not counting on that from happening. Look, I think we would all, every single person I know, I don't know of anyone who would not rather see a negotiated settlement in which Hamas agrees to no longer be a terrorist group, lay down their arms, free the hostages, by the way, not just the hostages that they're holding from Israel, but frankly, the people of Gaza that they're also holding hostage as human shields. So that would be the ideal outcome, one we would all like to see. It's one that's been worked on. But I think we have to be prepared for the fact that savage, you know, terrorists don't normally agree to things like that. But we'll continue to pursue that route. It's the ideal outcome, but it may require, ultimately, a concise military operation to eliminate them. We have to remember who we're dealing with here, and that is a group of people that have dedicated their lives to violence and barbarism. And when you're confronting that hard reality, as much as we may wish that there be a sort of a peaceful diplomatic way to end it, and we'll continue to explore and be dedicated to it, we also have to be prepared for the possibility that that's not going to happen.
So that leaves the door open, obviously, for further military operations in Gaza by Israel. And we're not seeing more talk about a ceasefire deal coming up. We're not seeing the return to talk really about aid in Gaza right now. We're seeing a return to the talk about targeting Hamas operatives and making sure to destroy them. The question is the consequence of that. And what does winning really look like? Which is the question that we asked last week. What does winning really look like here? And how does the United States actually define it? It's a really important question to ask that. And it's one that we can ask in many different situations. What does winning look like? And I like asking those broader based questions in this sort of setting where we don't normally get to do this in 24-hour news cycle, right into a commercial, or, you know, we don't get to tackle more philosophical questions. And I'm going to ask you one as we transition to the Charlie Kirk story, which is this: what does a free society look like to you? What are the components that we need for a free society? If the American people are free and we're a free people, what does that mean? What are the guardrails for a free society? Are there any? How does the rule of law figure into that? What does free speech really look like in a free society? What protections are afforded to you as a citizen or not? These are big questions. And when we think about that, it's almost like asking you, well, how do you know who you love? Sometimes you say, well, because I had that feeling, you know, or I had that moment and it became clear to me. Sometimes making a laundry list, though, is more difficult. And the reason why I'm asking that question is, how can we be a free society if we don't do some actual mission planning for it? You know, what if the mission is a free society, then what are the ingredients to it? And that's one of the reasons why this story about the murder of Charlie Kirk is such a big national story. There's several reasons for it. And I received a lot of questions, some of them really wonderfully asked, gently asked, some of them angry about why this is such a big story, because Charlie Kirk was a person that was more aligned with the right, more conservative, more Christian. He said that he was more closely aligned with the Constitution. And because he had a political affiliation, there's that question of, well, is that why? Is the media bias showing itself that they're promoting this particular story? And I think there's a couple of ways to unpack that. But let me just go with it quickly, just with the news. And this is quickly changing, so I want to preface that. But we do have a little bit of sound from the FBI director from earlier today that I just want to play for you. Because at this point, we do have a suspect in custody. We know, according to Utah officials, that the suspect is not cooperating, but that some friends and family did. And one thing just to flag, if you listen to the press conference from Friday when the suspect was arrested, the announcement of his arrest was made, it was very clear that without the help of friends and family, it's a very good question for the FBI about how many clear leads they had, because it looks like the community was very, very important to this person's arrest. But here's the FBI Director Kash Patel speaking on Fox News this morning. Just a quick snippet from him.
Learned was there was evidence, DNA evidence, that could be collected and had been collected, including a screwdriver that was found on the rooftop. Also, we went over to the scene in the wooded area where the firearm was discarded, and the firearm had a towel wrapped around it. And I can report today that the DNA hits from the towel that was wrapped around the firearm and the DNA on the screwdriver are positively processed for the suspect in custody.
So the FBI is talking about more and more evidence tying the suspect to the crime. We expect tomorrow in the state of Utah to get the charges officially filed against this individual. So we'll learn a little bit more over the next 24 hours, and that's coming. Obviously, there's questions still. Well, how did this all happen? You know, what was the true motivation? Were there other people assisting? Did someone know this was happening before? Are there accessories to this crime? Is this actually the person? And the FBI director is trying to calm that, to say this, we're finding a series of different pieces of evidence that tie this individual to the crime. But these are questions that naturally kind of swirl after a crime. So let's talk a little bit about why this story is such a big story. And it really ties into that question about a free society. But there are a few ways that this story is different than other stories that we've seen as of late. And I'm going to list a few reasons for it. One, the fact that this entire crime was captured on video make it much different. So instantly, it was captured on video, it was shared all over the world. That's going to elevate any story, no matter who is the target, to a much, much more visible, high-profile level. That's absolutely going to be the case. Again, does it matter political affiliation or otherwise? The fact that Charlie Kirk was so young, you know, 31 years old, was a father of two children, was married, these play into why there is an outcry, because not just of his those that agreed with him or disagreed with him on how he spoke or who he was, but because of the fact that this is someone who lost their life at a very key moment. We could talk about in that kind of this moment of youth and energy, and suddenly that's gone. Someone that's younger also is going to get more attention, believe it or not, than someone that's a little bit older that is a victim of a crime. So there's parts of the story that really have nothing to do with Charlie Kirk's work. And then there's parts of the story that definitely do. And this deserves a little bit more time. You might have seen me speak a little bit about this on social media. But when I initially saw him being described as a political activist, that I felt that for those of you on Smarter News, I wanted to give you a little bit more depth. Because a political activist makes it sound, I don't want to say pedestrian. I mean, anyone's a political activist. Charlie Kirk was a leader of a movement, and a movement that was tied into not only conservative politics, but faith in Christianity. He was the person that was reaching out to young people in America, and he was a real star with that, someone that people followed and felt was a role model. And for those on the outside that aren't as familiar with his work, you may not see him as the equivalent of like a celebrity or a pop star or an athlete, you know, somebody that has a higher profile because of their social currency. But he did. Within his circles, he did. And so for those that understood this, the loss is even greater. For those that are new to this, it may be a little bit confusing. I had a really good friend of mine who asked me, actually it was the day after this happened, and said, man, I feel politically knowledgeable. I listened to the news, I was not as familiar with his work. And that probably had to do with their age, just being a little bit older and not being on college campuses and not really understanding that perspective. Because if you weren't necessarily tied into conservative politics or enjoy listening to him speak about Christian values, you might be somebody that you would have missed. And it's not, that doesn't also surprise me. As someone that worked in traditional media, there was at first an apprehension. So we see these social media stars start to rise. Why don't you guys go back like 10 years? You know, who are these people online? Who do they have the ability to weigh in on American politics? Should we put them up against somebody that's a professor at some school talking about poli-sci? You know, no, they're just, you know, they're influencers. They're not quite as important as these other people that have, you know, studied politics and been really active in political groups for 40 years. Well, that has definitely switched over the last 10 years to where those that are influencing, if you will, online have a way of reaching into the public in a way that academics or others do not, regardless of political experience. What's interesting too about Charlie Kirk, and I want to flag this for you, is that he started Turning Point USA, which is this group that also grew and changed. So there was a lot underneath that umbrella that again played to conservative values, Republican politics, although not necessarily totally accepted by the Republican Party all the time, Christianity, faith-based, you know, there's a lot of different things underneath this umbrella. He started this in 2012 as an 18-year-old. And if you go back to that time period, I just want to take you back a little bit. If you go to the financial crisis of 2007, 2008, 2009, you start seeing an Occupy Wall Street movement. This was a movement of people sometimes camping out on Wall Street. I was in New York City at the time, you know, a way of standing up against big banks and in some ways standing up against capitalism. And it was a movement that sometimes crossed political boundaries. So you could see someone that was more libertarian, conservative could join that movement, and definitely those that were more progressive. But in this time period, in the aftermath of this, you also saw the rise of the Tea Party, which was part of the Republican Party. Those that didn't feel that they identified with Republicans in the way that perhaps the party identified in the past, the Tea Party Republicans were the ones that were more libertarian, were anti-big government, that didn't like the sort of debt that the government was holding, didn't like government spending, that wanted, that pushed into, again, more libertarian, hey, we're going to be against big government. Some Republicans are for big government, we're against big government. And this is the sort of period that Charlie Kirk comes into his own. And you start seeing the Republican Party really split. And that's something that's been very interesting to watch in recent years with the rise of President Trump, because there were a lot of Republicans that did not embrace President Trump. And yes, some do now, but that wasn't always the case. And there's a lot of arguing and diversity within the Republican Party that sometimes you don't see as much within the Democrat Party. And in fact, one of the exercises our team was doing was thinking about, well, who is the answer? If we could say, okay, here's Charlie Kirk, who's the answer to Charlie Kirk on the liberal side? Who is that person? And if you have a name, I'd love to know that. But we couldn't come up with someone that was as close with leaders of the Democrat Party as Charlie Kirk became close with leaders of the Republican Party. And that's part of the reason, again, you see this elevation of this story, because Charlie Kirk was close friends with Vice President Vance, President Trump, friends with Tucker Carlson, a conservative commentator, friends with those that had actual power and that understood his power to talk to younger people. One of the things that his executive producer said at Turning Point USA today on the news, I was listening to an interview, is he said that Charlie Kirk went to college campuses in part because he said that this was the best information he could get. He enjoyed the discourse, being able to go to college campuses and debate people live and take on their different belief systems, whether it was about immigration or abortion or free market, whatever it was. He liked engaging, but he also said he learned a lot about where young people are and what they were talking about and what they needed. And in that way, he became invaluable to those that were seeking office. And unlike previous times where you could see those in elected office turn to the experts, those that are political operatives, moving people around for years, talking about messaging and branding, lawmakers were turning to Charlie Kirk for insight. Where are the young people? What do people feel like? What is that all about? So this is part of the reason why this murder is elevated. It's about his age. It's about his personal background. It's about, yes, his political affiliations, but also about his faith that he talked about. So he was a way of connecting with people. And even though he was seen as an outsider at one time, where maybe traditional media or traditional politics wouldn't accept him, in recent years, he was seen as a very powerful force in the conservative movement overall in America. And this is part of the reason why this story is elevated, regardless of the shocking violence that was captured on camera. Does anyone have any questions about that before I go on? Because I do find that there's some that are asking questions about, well, wait a minute, there were these Minnesota lawmakers that were murdered in Minnesota a couple weeks ago that didn't get anything close to this. And unfortunately, I agree with you. It didn't get as much attention. There were several reasons for that, including the fact that these Minnesota lawmakers were not national figures, that it happened in a state, in a specific area, in the dead of night, in their homes, and it was awful and nightmarish, and it nothing makes it okay. That's not what I'm saying. We're easy to be passed over. But in the course of news coverage, it's just not going to get the same sort of elevation that this story is going to get. And I'll leave it to you to decide if that's correct. But unfortunately, when stories hit and they hit a little bit more local, then it's more difficult to pull them out into the national stage or international stage. And that's something that was where Charlie Kirk operated. You wouldn't affiliate him with a specific state. You would affiliate him with a political party, but not a particular state. And so that's one of the reasons we see this, as awful as that is. Sometimes the local news or state news just does not translate as much on the national stage because people are less familiar with that particular politician. But this does play into something that was discussed on the news over the weekend, which is why are we seeing this sort of violence? Where is it coming from? What are the ingredients to it? And Face the Nation had two different politicians on, one Democrat, one Republican. And I cut a little bit of sound for you on this. Senator Coons is from Delaware. He's a Democrat. You're going to hear from him first. Senator Lankford is a Republican from Oklahoma. They tend to talk to each other. And Senator Lankford, as a Republican, is known to reach across the aisle. So is Senator Coons. And they're talking to Major Garrett, who is a political correspondent, a veteran journalist on CBS. And he was asking them about their reflections. And I just want to play a little bit of this for you because it's going to tie into why now. I solved a big snack problem in our household in a very simple way. My children love eating berries, and so do I, for not just the taste, but the vitamins and nutrients, fiber, all the good stuff we want on a regular basis. The problem? We all know what it's like to pick up a berry we just bought, and it's already growing fuzz in the fridge. So I've switched to buying frozen berries. And a favorite I look for now is Washington Red Raspberries. Did you know 90% of frozen red raspberries in the United States are grown in Washington State and mostly grown on family farms who harvest them during peak ripeness and clean and freeze on location, sealing in all that freshness, taste, and great nutritional value. So now I use frozen raspberries in our yogurt or smoothies as a sweet treat. And I love that this means I can support local American farmers and have a healthy snack for my family that withstands the test of time. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at your local grocery store or Costco. And how do you know you're getting the good stuff? Well, you just take a peek at the packaging and look for product of the U.S. And then you'll know you're on the right path. Oh, and if you want some fun recipes and more information, go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. And you're going to find recipes, health tips, retail locations, everything you need to make frozen Washington red raspberries a regular part of your routine. Overall, it's just a smarter choice.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brutal assassination of Charlie Kirk while he was in the middle of a debate on a college campus goes to the very heart of what it means to be American, of the importance of the First Amendment, of free speech. And someone like Charlie Kirk, who is a nationally known figure, who dedicated himself to debate, to engagement with his political adversaries, should not have paid with his life for the opportunity to speak out. No matter how much I might deeply disagree with his political views, the idea that he would be killed in such a grotesque and public way has to bring all of us to reflect about how hard it's getting, because the internet is an accelerant. It is driving extremism in our country. It's driving us apart, left and right. And leaders like Senator Lankford, Governor Cox, have an obligation and an opportunity to join with leaders from my party in urging folks to set aside any thought of political violence and to respect each other, even as we keep advancing our political differences through discourse.
Senator Langford, do you ever at times feel as if your appeals for better angels, calmer rhetoric, more bipartisanship is shouting into an internet void?
It is, because the algorithm pushes people to the most extreme. The algorithm is all on social media is always pushing who's the angriest, who's the loudest, who says the craziest thing. That's what gets repeated over and over and over again. So anytime that there is cogent dialogue or an issue on something where people may disagree, but they're having a civil conversation on it, that gets pushed aside towards someone that's just angry and focused. This is somewhat human nature to be able to say we disagree. We find areas where we disagree and we try to be able to solve those. The best way to be able to solve those is through words, talking it out, finding an opportunity to be able to do it. But I would tell you this kind of anger is as old as Cain and Abel, to be able to go back and say, I'm mad at you, so I'm going to try to destroy you, whether it's destroy you online or to try to humiliate you or to cancel you or to, in this case, try to murder you publicly. It is painful to be able to see that part of humanity, and it is better for us to be able to push better angels.
So two different perspectives there. Did you notice what they both said in common? Instead of talking about their own behavior or behavior within their own parties, really taking ownership or acknowledging anything that they feel that they could have contributed, they both turned to social media and the internet. Now, based on our conversations in recent months and years, many of us have turned with a skeptical eye towards social media about what, and ask the question, what is that doing to our lives and the sort of opinions that we're developing, how we're interacting with people? Without a doubt. The question is that really what happened here? And we're going to learn more about this suspect and learn more about this crime to understand that, because there's a term being used, you know, radicalization of the suspect. And we need to be more specific as to what actually transpired here, because perhaps social media is part of this and perhaps not. What was interesting after this conversation is that there was a professor that was on the show. Just a shout out to Major Garrett. He tends to do this, by the way, as a veteran journalist. And one of the reasons I like watching him is because he'll pull in. He'll be like, well, let's talk to a professor. Let's talk a little bit about history. This professor's name is Robert Pape. He's with the University of Chicago, and he has studied what's happening in the political landscape of America. What, just to set up what I'm about to share with you, is he believes that changing demographics are changing politics in the United States, and that changing demographics, the changing culture in America, is being reflected in higher tensions because of just the way that this change is taking place. I'm being very general here, but it almost demands another conversation. What I really want you to hear is what he has to say about the internet and how much he believes it's to blame.
Research buttressed the point that both Senator Langford and Senator Coons made, which is the internet is an accelerant and an amplifier.
It's an accelerant, but it's not the root cause. So studying this problem now for 5 years, I've found that just as around the world, big social change, it drives political violence. We see this in other countries around the world, but the details of the change vary. And these are why it's not the internet is not important. It's a reinforcing factor. And there is,
in other words, it's too simplistic to say it's the internet.
Exactly, because that's why a few years ago, people challenged my findings, and they said, oh, no, we'll just deplatform people. So the problem here is just the internet. So we're going to deplatform X, Y, and Z. We deplatformed X, Y, and Z, and you know what? Didn't miss a beat. And the reason is because, yes, it is an additional, it's like throwing gasoline on the fire, but the internet is not the fire itself. There's something going on which is really radicalizing our politics. And I'm sorry to say, this is a story that we've seen around the world in other countries, other time. And so this is the social change leading to radicalized politics that changes winners and losers in our society for real. And that's leading to political violence.
Okay, I would like to actually invite him on the program too to talk a little bit more about that in depth and unpack that. He said it's really both sides. It's not Republicans or Democrats solely. It's both sides. It's the changing nature of America, changing value systems. And because of that, we're getting this rising tension. And this is a progression of it. He also said, though, that our fate is not sealed, that we don't have to continue to go down this road. It's being aware of it and making a change. In fact, his suggestion was that he believes that President Trump Governor Pritzker of Illinois and Governor Newsom of California should have a summit at the White House and meet and have that public display of, we can say a lot of awful things about each other and maybe even to each other, but we're still going to meet and we're going to have a moment that's a very visible sign to the public that this can still happen in America. I'm curious your thoughts on that. Do you think that would matter at this point? What are your thoughts? Now, let me talk to you about another turn to this story that also can be confusing and may not be something that we've typically seen in recent controversial stories. We can pull a little bit from the pandemic, but it may or may not apply here. And what I'm talking about is in the last several days, the aftermath and public reaction to Charlie Kirk's death, his murder, has led a lot of folks to talk out, to speak out, to share their opinion. And at times, their opinion has been met with backlash, either socially or professionally, with their firing. And that question has arisen about free speech. Well, wait a minute. What about free speech in America? What about this? Is it because Charlie Kirk is Republican and affiliated with the Trump administration that companies feel permission to come down harder? Is there something else going on here behind the scenes that this is different? So let's tackle that. Before we do, though, I just want to mention this. We do see this in the aftermath of someone's death, especially when it's unexpected, that there's two different paths that can be chosen. Some will lionize this person and talk about, and I've already seen, you know, different conservative commentators say that Charlie Kirk was a civil rights leader because of how he stood up for the Constitution and faith and stood up for others and wanted to expand the Republican Party. But there's going to be a lot of folks that disagree with that. There's also a lot of folks, and again, generalizing here, that just fundamentally disagreed with Charlie Kirk's politics, didn't like him at all, don't have anything nice to say about him, and are proudly saying that too. And saying it in a way that even in attempts to be sensitive can come across as very insensitive, especially given the timing of all of this and how this all transpired at a college campus where free discussion was taking place, where there was an openness to debate that this murder took place. So we have to be a little cautious with both of these things, the demonization of someone and the lionization of them in the aftermath of their death. And I'm also seeing a lot of cherry picking about different quotes from Charlie Kirk, sometimes completely out of context, that demands more. So if you're interested in this, there's a variety of YouTube channels right now. I don't even need to give you one. You could say Charlie Kirk debates on campus and you could see him debate on a variety of different issues. And you can start making up your own mind if you're not familiar with his work and see how he interacted with people. It'll be useful, way more useful than a quote or 15 seconds. So I encourage you to do that again, just so that you can pass your own judgment. In the aftermath, knowing that these two extremes are happening, the demonization and the lionization of someone, what about being able to speak out online and say something about this? How can employers come down on people and why? And why? Where's this line? Where's this line being crossed about saying something that, you know, that maybe you don't feel particularly sensitive to this person because you didn't agree with their politics? And although you didn't want someone to be killed, you don't feel particularly a sense of mourning. I'm summarizing, again, some of what I've seen online over the weekend, a dangerous thing to do, but there's enough out there. I think you've all seen it. I was talking about this earlier today, trying to think about a crime that where this happens occasionally, where someone says, well, it shouldn't have happened, but they kind of deserved it. And what I thought about is it used to be that's how we would talk about sexual assault. Oh yeah, she didn't deserve to get attacked, but you know what she was wearing? You know, she was out late at night. You know, she was talking to a lot of people at that bar. Should have been doing that. Created the circumstance for it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And very few people in the news of a sexual assault would come out online and be like, well, she deserved it. And in a way, this is sort of what's happening here. But it's happening in a different way within the umbrella of politics. So somehow it feels different. And yes, you may say, well, Jenna, those conversations do happen. You know, people do ask, well, what decisions did she make that led to this sort of attack? But at the end of the day, we all know that no one deserves to be attacked. The innocent person doesn't deserve to be attacked, even by what they say or how they behave or what they wear. That would be justifying crime. And that's not what we're going to do. We certainly wouldn't do it in a situation of a young woman, but there's a way that this is sort of happening for this particular crime because of the politics associated with Charlie Kirk. So I thought that would be helpful to sharing with you of like, this is a little bit about what's happening here and why there's a feeling of discomfort, but also a feeling of permission that if you say something that's sort of tacit approval of this, that you're providing further permission for more violence. And again, in any other situation, can you imagine if that was a rape or a murder of a child, that there was tacit permission to continue it? And that's all for all of us to think, whoa, wait, no, of course not. So that's, again, what's happening here. But within the stiff politics that we're having, that comparison doesn't seem to be coming through. So you have a lot of folks that are saying stuff that they didn't like this guy. They're not necessarily sad. So they're going to say something about it. So where does free speech begin and end? The important thing to know about free speech in America is that we all think that we have it all the time, but our free speech is always limited. We have a lot of rights in America. Those rights are typically limited in some way. Free speech in particular is the government protecting you from persecution by the government, not protecting you from the consequences of your actions. Those are two different things. So free speech was there to protect you against a tyrannical government, not to protect you from your friends and family. You don't get protected because of that or from a private employer. So it's really important to know that the First Amendment free speech protection is only restricted to government action. It's not private ones, companies or individuals. And it means that in this way, yes, if you are a public sector employee, in some ways, you have more protection from your employer than someone that works for a private company. I'm going to explain that in a second. But private companies have a way of disciplining or firing workers for speech that the government would not necessarily been able to do. So there's a lot more leeway within the private sector and within our private lives than if you are a government employee, because probably fewer of you work for the government or attached to the government in some way. I want to talk a little bit about the private sector, but we're going to go back to the government. And by the way, the government is your federal government. It's your state government. It's your local government. The more and more local we get, the harder it can be sometimes to disentangle this. But let's just talk a little bit about private employment. So private employment in America is typically just at-will employment, which is true in almost every state except for Montana, which lets all of us be hired or fired at will, which means I can be hired and I can leave a job if I want to at will. I don't have to have an explanation. It is true that someone cannot fire you if that crosses over to federal or state discrimination laws. For example, firing someone because they are pregnant. That's illegal. That crosses over discrimination laws on a federal and state level. Therefore, you can't fire someone because of that. But you can fire someone because you don't like them or you don't like what they're saying. You're not protected because of that. Now, someone can make the case, well, you're discriminating against me because I'm of a certain religion or a certain race. And that always can be done, even if you fire someone with no explanation, but they need very specific examples of that discrimination happening. You can't just say that it happens. You have to be very specific about it. So that means that we're living in this time period where we think somehow we're able to say whatever we want, whenever we want. It's not true if you're a private person. And meaning that the consequence is totally on the table for all of us of our actions. The Bill of Rights does not protect us from accountability for our actions. And sometimes we're walking around or existing in this world of social media, like I could say whatever I want, whenever I want. And the reality is there's no law that protects you from that. You're still using a messaging through a private company, even through social media. Nothing really protects you from that. I'm pausing because I think we think that there is a protection, but there's really not. And I was thinking about my time just quickly as a in the media. In the media, when I worked at Fox News many years ago, and this is true across different media platforms, and depending on if you're attached to, you know, something like a football team or an agency or a studio of some sort, there can be a morality clause. I just want to speak to this for a second. Morality clause can mean that my employer, for whatever reason, didn't like what I was doing. They could just fire me. And it could be whatever they want. It could be that I was having a couple drinks in my backyard and someone thought that I drank too much and got back to my bosses and they felt that that was antithetical to the organization. I could just be fired. I could be in a different country. I could be in Mexico with my husband privately. You know, we had too many margaritas on the beach. I'm using these examples because they're easy. And someone says, look at this, look at what she was doing. I could be fired in a second. They don't have to even give me a reason. And if you think about the way that we're all behaving, in a lot of ways, we're all behaving like public figures right now because we're putting our lives online. Well, you could say, well, wait a minute, Jenna, wait a minute. It's a private Instagram account. It's not for everybody. Well, then ask yourself, is everybody private within your circle? Because even if you're doing something within your home, harder, but even if you're doing something in your home, it can have a consequence. Someone walks by someone's home and there's some sort of flag flying inside their house above their fireplace. They see it in a picture. And your employer says, that's not what we agree with. It's in within the walls of your home, but it does not matter. They can fire you. It's at will. So I share this both for information and also as a warning of existing in the time and space that we're in, because some of the comments that I see online, your commentary on social media, it's not even what you posted. Oh, I got a couple of those screenshots for sure. Just because sometimes you're like, is that a threat? Is that a real threat? It doesn't even have to be a threat. It's just your behavior online in the comment section on Facebook or Instagram could be viewed as not what your employer wants anything to do with. So they're going to fire you. Like, this is the reality. And it's really important to note this because we're seeing this sort of reaction to this particular case. Now, what if I'm a teacher, Jenna? What if I work for the government? It is harder because the person that would be firing you is the government. And remember, the First Amendment is there to protect you from the government, a tyrannical government. So it is, you do have more protection, but you do not have absolute protection. You may have a case, but that doesn't mean that you're absolved of consequence. So I share that for what it's worth, because I think it's really important. Discrimination based on speech. The government cannot control your speech, but a private employer can with some limitations. Private employees can usually be fired for off-duty speech and actions. For example, social media posts, bumper stickers, attending a protest or rally without any legal recourse. Some state laws and local ordinances offer employees additional limited protections, but your free speech does not absolve you from personal accountability. Just something to think about. We could go back to COVID real quick. Again, it doesn't totally work, but there's obviously a lot of different opinions about the pandemic that were expressed during that time. And you saw a variety of different actions to that. The reason why actions could be taken, for example, on Instagram to a post that I put up, is because it's a private company. And Instagram could decide they didn't like my post on the CDC. So they can actually do that. I don't have protection for that. Cancel culture is a little bit different. I see that being thrown around. Well, is this a response to cancel culture? The thing that's different about cancel culture is that is, let's say, a group or let's think about Target, something that Target is controversial. There's a group mentality that I'm not going to shop at Target anymore. So a group of people attempt to put pressure on Target, or Target's doing something, so I am going to shop there more. And so a group of people turn to support. Cancel culture is exactly what it is. It's a cultural movement. It's not necessarily someone taking legal repercussions, although they can, depending on what the case is. So this is a moment in time where we can talk about this a little bit more. It's not just that Charlie Kirk was expressing free speech and that he was embracing it and debating on campus. There's also another sort of free speech part of this story where we're seeing a reaction from private businesses that we haven't necessarily seen related to other stories. And even those that maybe didn't post something that seems so obviously in support of this crime are seeing repercussions of it. And it's because for whatever reason, companies don't have to give you a reason. They can just say they didn't like that. And they're worried about it. So they're not. So you, thank you. There's the door. Any questions on that? I'm very curious about this. Krista says, I previously worked at a courthouse and we agreed to not any political anything on social media, stickers in our car, attending any rally, or even signing any petition. This isn't uncommon. That's right. Tori says, I feel like a huge issue is Facebook allowing anonymous commenting and posting. I understand it for some things, but I've seen a lot of negative responses and bullying done on that front. Very interesting. The anonymous stuff is difficult. It is because there's no accountability for that. So how do you chase someone down? I don't know. And that can still affect public opinion. You see a lot of those different sites that are pushing different theories about crimes. You don't really know who's behind it. And it's very difficult. Some of you are talking about the golden rule online. Yeah, it's interesting what we believe. And I'll check in a little bit on Instagram too, because I'm curious what you guys think about this. You can believe that you have some protection, but the law does not provide that. So it goes back to what do you believe is a free society? What does that look like? That you're protected from anything, anytime, anywhere, any place, or not? So very curious your thoughts and look forward to your questions on that. Some of you have questions about hate speech and what free speech does not create, you know, protect hate speech. Hate speech is, and that could even, will be very, it'll be interesting to see about these charges against this particular suspect and if anybody else is charged as well as part of a conspiracy or there's any accessories to this crime in any way. You know, there's, some of it can be a little arbitrary when we're talking about hate speech or threats. I don't know if I was going to bring up a case, but I want to be very careful with it. You can't, for example, make a direct threat against any president of the United States. You really aren't supposed to make any threats at all. But someone could say something in jest like, ugh, I wish they could just get rid of him. And if it's put within a context of an actual threat, that it's not just said as a joke or performative, if it's thought that it's too serious, that it crossed a line, even something that seems very vague can be viewed as a potential felony. And especially with social media and the context in which things, you know, people are saying things live, it can be very difficult to police or know what crosses those lines. So, you know, this is the sort of period that we're in where it felt at one time that the pendulum was really swinging to where social media was allowing a lot of different commentary and debate. Then it feels like, wait a minute, it swung one direction where certain political debate was allowed or certain commentary about COVID was allowed, but not others. And now are we seeing private businesses take a stand and suddenly say, wait a minute, wait just a second. This is what we actually think is the mission for our businesses. You guys do whatever you want in your private life, but in our way of representing our businesses, we're going to take certain moves. I see a lot of questions about what's happening on university campuses and also for different teachers. If the university is a private university, there's more leeway for firing. If it is not a private university, it's a public university, it can be a little bit more complicated. Depends on the situation. So I've received a few questions. I'm going to finish up on this because many of you have been asking about good news. And I want to just give you a second while I chat. If you have any sort of other questions related to our news cycle, we went a little longer than normal. But if anything comes up, please go ahead and put your questions in the live chat and I'll get to them. I do want to answer this. Brenna was asking, Jenna, on a personal level, how do you keep up on all the news and not have it affect you emotionally? And Margie says, I echo Brenna's question. I could talk about this for too long, so I won't talk about it too long. I will say the one thing that really gets to me from a Smarter News perspective is sometimes I get a question. And one woman asked me, Emily, I want to give her a shout out online because she's been a follower of ours for years, but she is someone that will question some of our editorial decisions, but she does it in a nice way. And I really appreciate that because sometimes it's important for us to understand what things look like from the outside. But for example, there's been, for example, one example she brought up was, well, wait a minute, why isn't there not more attention placed on school shootings? Or why isn't there more attention placed on immigration law? Like, why can something like this crime get elevated? And how do you make these editorial calls? And that can be really hard for me because I care about all the stories. And I genuinely am curious about the world and what's happening and want to make sure that we're everywhere that we need to be. I also think on Smarter News, I really want to value your time. So if I'm thinking, if you have 3 minutes a day, which is what I think you normally have, I'm really thinking about what do I need to touch on that you could come across that will equip you for those conversations. So for example, on immigration and some of the ICE operations that have been taking place, one of the things we've done on Smarter News really since we started, which is seven, eight years, is we have covered immigration and border numbers every single month. I don't know a single news organization that's done the same thing. We're very close to that story. And there are times where there's different ICE operations happening, but it's not necessarily changing the previous reporting. Some of those stories are more local, and they are things that maybe aren't going to be encountered on a wider scale. Or I'm thinking, okay, I see that story. That's going to go to the courts. And as soon as it gets to the courts, we're going to be able to have a clean way of looking at both sides. Right now, I don't know if I have all the facts. It happened with the Colorado high school shooting last week. The facts coming out, the information coming out on that story was extremely difficult and not clear. So I had a choice to make. Do I share something that's not clear just to prove to people that were watching the story or not? Eventually, we got a little bit more clear information later in the evening. We took a soundbite. But I'm watching these stories, and it's hard to be accused of not caring about them or being personally attacked for editorial decisions, because I'm always thinking about you. And when I think about you, I don't think about you in a political way. I'm not thinking about you as a Republican or Democrat. I'm thinking about you as a person existing in the world and what you're experiencing on social media. And I'm going this part. I don't know of that many places that are going to give you such a succinct, for example, rundown of TikTok, China, Ukraine, Russia, Hamas, Gaza, Israel, Qatar, like we just did on Smarter News. I think you need to have a taste of that, though, just in case something happens, you're a little bit better equipped. I'm thinking about you for that. I don't think it matters your political point of view on it. Similarly, with this Charlie Kirk story, I don't think it's really about, it is about politics, but it's not. And because of Charlie Kirk's relationship with the White House, it's just going to get that much more attention. It just is. And that's part of the service that we're providing is, well, how do we fill a need, answer questions when you need it? So those personal attacks sometimes are very hard for me. The news is very difficult, but I believe in a service that we're providing a service for you. So when things are very difficult, I know that's time to go to work. And so I feel purposeful because of you. And that is helpful. But in the weeks and days that follow, I definitely feel it in a lot of different ways. And I have found the last several days to be very difficult personally. What I have found very personally problematic, and I'm going to share this, I don't know how many of my friends are listening or family members, but I am going to share this. One of the things I love about being a journalist is not talking, it's listening. Aggressive listening is very important, because if you listen, you get so much more information than if you did not. It's why we say curiosity over commentary. The amount of incoming people that want to share how they think about the topic, rather than saying, hey, what does Smarter News say about that? Or what did, I know you listen to the press conferences, like what do you, you know, the amount of people that just need to talk is at an all-time high. And while I usually love listening and I'm pride myself in being a good listener, the last couple of days have been very difficult. I just want to share that. So I would encourage everybody to ask a question before sharing how you feel in this moment, because you may realize something's going on with someone else that you had no idea. And then you're just, you're not even being sensitive to what they're experiencing. And as all of us know, so much is happening in our private lives that no one understands. So it's very much a superpower, curiosity over commentary. You have a really important thing to talk about with your boss. Go in and ask, hey boss, how are things going? What's the biggest challenge this week? Oh, okay, that's it. Maybe, oh, your grandmother's sick? Okay, well, maybe that's not the time for the conversation. You see what I'm saying? You get a little bit more information. Curiosity over commentary really works. It really does. And I say it because I'm not always great at it. So sharing that with you. Let me jump on Instagram real quick to see how you guys are doing. I know the video is going to end in just a second, but I will make sure to share this with everybody. And continue to share information as we get it. This story regarding Charlie Kirk is going to turn it. We're going to see a service, a memorial service at the White House today. The vice president is broadcasting in his show. There's going to be continued fallout to this. What does that look like? Can lead us a lot of different directions. And so when people are talking about this being a watershed moment, the question is, does this become one? Do we see policy, legislation? Do we see moments like the one that Professor Pape was describing, or Pap was describing? If you see, you know, a bipartisan moment or not, you know, where does this go to? So the story can go a lot of different directions. One of the most frustrating things about being a journalist and also realizing this in our personal lives is that you cannot rush a story. You cannot rush a story. It develops at its own time, in its own way. And that's all we can do is continue to respect it, honor it, make sure we're providing solid information, and do the best that we can. And I'll leave you with that thought. Many of you have asked for the good news, which I get. I want the good news too. I'm like, where are the puppies? That's why you guys, I found leopard cubs, okay? Like that, not typical news day, okay? I found cubs. I found something that was a baby that was cute, including my own. I put up there, you know, you can be the good news though, in your own life, whatever that looks like. So I read another story. I didn't get a chance to it. There was a hiker in Colorado. There's all these 14,000 foot peaks that you can hike all over the United States. And there's obviously some in Colorado. And so there was hikers, I believe it was over Labor Day. They got to the top of this peak, and this guy was sitting up there with a bunch of ice creams, like just for the hikers, just like he hiked up there with a bunch of ice cream and handed it out. And then once it was gone, he hiked back down. And the hikers were talking about, like, how did he hike up with a cooler in his backpack? And then he just handed out all this ice cream. And it was amazing. So that's a way of someone being the good news. So if when in doubt, here's the lesson. Hand out ice cream, everything. That'll at least be a little good news in people's lives. I don't think that's a bad thing. So, all right, guys, I am going to leave you be. Thank you so much for everybody that is joining us today. I appreciate your live participation. And thank you for going with us on this trip. There's surely things that we could have covered a little bit more. And one of the reasons why I didn't get into the details of every part of Charlie Kirk's platform is, number one, I think that's something you need to do for yourself. If you're curious about it, you need to spend a little time. And the cherry picking on that is completely out of control. In the end of the day, the politics of this person is not as important as what we're talking about regarding a free society as being one of law and order, one that embraces open debate, where curiosity is actually libertary, where curiosity really is liberty. And commentary is secondary. It doesn't always feel that way. But those are some of the ways that I think about a free society. So these are some of the reasons why this story needs to be pulled out a little bit and talked about a little bit further about this time and place that we share. So go ahead, be the good news this week, and I'll see you back with more quick insights, nonpartisan news on smarternews.com. Have a great week, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news, and we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.